This interview segment is sponsored by Just Fund Kentucky. Just Fund Kentucky is an endowment that supports the many community groups that are fighting for fairness and equality around the state of Kentucky. To learn how your organization can apply for this grant funding each year, go to www.justfundky.org. Again, that's www.justfundky.org. Howdy, howdy, y'all, and welcome back to Weathering Rainbows. This is actually part two of our Fears of Coming Out series, and it is because we're going to provide a real-life story today. Today we have Josh Astor, who most people in the gay community know as Jace Steele. He is the owner of a photography business, Jace Steele Photography. He's actually done several of our pictures here at Weathering Rainbows, as well as many drag queens throughout the state of Kentucky. So we're excited to have him, and we specifically wanted him to come on the show today because he is recently out. He waited until he was 35 years old to come out because he was from a very religious family, and he was a Christian school teacher at the time. So it's interesting to kind of see his journey and to see the fears that he had before coming out and the fears that he might even still have today, which has been a year from the time he's come out. With that, we're going to get on into the interview. Well, howdy, howdy, Miss Halston.
Let's go for a walk on the Rainbow Trail.
Oh, no. The last time you forgot the umbrellas and got us into a whole heap of trouble.
I won't forget this time. Let's go.
Stone.
And we ain't got no umbrella. We better run! Sha! We made it!
And I'm glad we had each other to weather the rainbows.
Hi. My name's Josh. I go by Jay Steele. I'm based out of Louisville. And I'm from Hardin County, Kentucky. I grew up in LaRue County, Hodgenville, Lincoln's birthplace. That's their big thing. And grew up in a Christian school. I was a Christian school teacher for 13 years. I came out a little over a year ago, but I've been gay my whole life. So, like, that's the win.
Josh, how did you know growing up that you were gay?
I was about 7 years old, and I remember being called gay at school. And at that time, my mother actually worked like on the playground as like a supervisor, and I got called that, and I kept getting called that. This was like the 90s, so gay was at that time kind of like a put down. And I remember going to my mom like, "Mom, I got called gay. What does that mean?" And she said, "Well, that means you like boys. Like most people like girls, and you don't like boys, right?" And I knew then my answer was like, no, like I just knew, like, and I remember that was like the first time I really lied to my mom. And I meant like, it was a deeper issue. It wasn't like, no, I didn't clean my room. This was like I'm lying about who I am and not something I did. So that was when I was seven. And then there's home videos and I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Like, they're there, but I would say probably around 7 years old when I was in school that I just kind of put it together that I am different, and how other people are talking, like how the boys in the classroom are talking about how this girl is cute. I'm like, something's not connecting. So I would say, gay my whole life, but seven is when I kind of put it together.
Why do you believe that it took you so long to come out?
I grew up Pentecostal. A preacher's kid home. I wouldn't say pastor. My dad wasn't like a pastor for most of my life, but preacher's kid home. My family was very into like focus on the family, like family parenting issues. And I just remember like that whole experience of church is like, gay is wrong. Like that's all I heard all the time. And in that world, you're like, okay, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. So then I took that on as I'm bad consistently. And I remember feeling like even in I would go through high school and all through high school, everyone called me gay. And I just kept denying it and denying it because I'm like, no, I can't, because the church had conditioned me to believe that it was a sin and it was a choice. And when I'm like, I'm going to choose not make that choice. I'm not going to. And so I kept going through that because that was the world, the culture and the system that had conditioned me to believe that. So I was like, okay, the messaging I received was it's a choice. And if I make better choices, then I'll be straight and I will get that life that the Christian church had presented to me as like the ideal life. Wife, kids, dog, picket fence, whole nine yards. And I kept trying and trying to like, okay, maybe I'm just missing out on that. And I remember being in church services and gatherings and thinking, I don't get it. Like, are they just miserable too? Like, something was not connecting. And so I kept trying. I went to a Bible school for 3 years. It was the one I thought, well, maybe this is it. Maybe if this is the formula I was presented. You graduate from high school, you go to Bible school, you find a partner before you're 21, you get married, you have, gosh, three kids and a dog. That was the life. And so I went to college and nothing happened. So then I graduated from Bible school and I was like, what do I want to do? Well, I wanted to be at that time I wanted to be a teacher. And so I applied at the Christian school that I graduated from. And then I realized I still was in that mindset of like, no, someday something's going to click and I'll be straight. Like something's going to magically happen and I'll like, it'll make sense. And when I was teaching, I realized I can never come out. Like being gay was not going to be a possibility as long as I worked there. So that led for 13 years. And even the students would call me gay. And I would deny it because that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, if there's a gay teacher at a Christian school, it's not going to be good.
When did you come out and what helped you overcome the fears you had? Obviously, there were several wrapped up because you were in a religious environment at that time.
I say I came out to myself August 10th. Part of my story is losing my grandmother in July and just getting to that wit's end of like, I'm done trying to please everyone else. I am miserable. I'm probably going to hurt myself if I keep going down this path. I'm gay. I remember telling this, my friend was checking on me and I thought maybe grief was part of that. And really, it was just that internal struggle of my best friend is gone and I'm gay. And I remember actually on her deathbed, I really wanted to tell her. I really wanted to tell my grandmother. Like it was there, but my dad was there, my mom was there, my aunt was there. I'm like, So I said, I'm gay to the first person in my life, August 10th. 2 weeks later, I'm on TikTok. I see this. He presented himself as a gay life coach. His name is Eric Feltus. And I was like, okay, what's this about? And he presented himself as a gay Christian. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm like, I know how I grew up. And that's not a thing. Like, are you for real? So I started watching his stuff. I reached out to him. And I remember writing this, like, don't tell anyone, an email to this guy in California. I'm like, don't tell anyone. I'm not even out to my parents. Blah, blah, blah. So I started working with him. And one of the things that he had me do was start journaling, which really was good just to like get all the pent up like mind battles I was having on in words. Because when you get put words to it, it's like, oh, that's how that feels. Mm-hmm. So I did journal and I journaled my fears at that time.
What were some of the specific fears that you remember experiencing?
Some of the things I would say is, I'm afraid I'm down the wrong path. I'm afraid that I will never see my family again. I'm afraid I'm going to live alone. I'm afraid, what if I'm wrong? All of those things were very valid.
How did journaling help you through those thoughts?
It's not like you write it and then it's like, okay, that doesn't mean anything. No, it's still there, but you've put words to it. So it's kind of like, okay, I've said it. Now I'm going to go get lunch. Like, you just kind of, you allow yourself to sit in that discomfort and those feelings versus just deny it, which is what I did for 34 years.
Will you discuss your personal religious experience and how the ideology kind of framed being gay?
Being Pentecostal in the scope of Christianity, the sect I grew up in was called Pentecostal Holiness, which basically means my sisters didn't cut their hair. They wore long skirts. I didn't wear shorts until this past summer. It was very controlling, but they're very into spiritual warfare in a sense. And so they believe someone who is homosexual is demon possessed and that they just need to get delivered.
Now, what does that mean to be delivered?
So in their mind, they feel like they need to lay hands on you. It's this huge, and it's not like, there's no like system to it. Like, in there have been services where they have this preacher and they put hands on it, and it's like this, everyone's yelling and it's just a lot of intensity. And have had people pray for me in that situation to get delivered.
How did that religious community pressure about the need for being delivered kind of affect your frame of mind?
Eventually you just get to the point of like, fine, I'll do what you want me to do. So then you just cover it up again. And you just add all these layers upon layers of like shame, because in your mind, there were services like, am I straight now? And the next day I was like, no, I'm gay. But I couldn't say that. I struggled. That's the word they want to say. You struggle with homosexuality.
What was the expectation like of like going through this delivery process?
The expectation was God is going to just magically take it all away.
Now, obviously, in order to come out, you reached a point in which you come to the realization that this was something that was not going to change for you. And it was something that God wasn't going to change. It was something that he kind of implanted in you. And so I want to know, during those moments of realization, how were you feeling?
So there was this like conflict of like, this is what I'm feeling, but this is what I was taught my entire life. So one of the big fears was, what if I'm wrong? And they're right. So like there, and that is something that it just takes a lot of time to work through, because the concept of hell and heaven is such a deep thing. And there's that deep seated, like, but this is what if? So that was a big thing. So just like even acknowledging that I am gay was really just like, what does this mean spiritually or like in my faith journey?
So even with that kind of paranoia, you still chose to come out. Were there any fears that kind of actually helped push you out?
The other thing I thought of like leading up to that is I have been denying this for 34 years. And so there is this fear of what does it feel like to actually just embrace it? And it was super like,
Do you remember any points like in your childhood where there were specific signals that kind of taught you that you couldn't go against the norm of, you know, what was being taught in that religious environment?
My grandmother was baking cookies and she put an apron on me. And my father walked in, had a conniption fit because his son was wearing an apron. And so there are little, and other people that knew me as a child have told me little situations like that, to where I'm like, you know what, that I'm a victim of the church. It's like, it's not my fault that I had all that shame. That was from other people.
Now, obviously, religion can affect, you know, parents as well as children and how we all were raised. Do you think there was any of that religious shame that kind of affected the way that your parents are treating you now?
I would say, you know, you would love to say that your parents love you unconditionally, but it's not. That wasn't my situation. There was conditions. My parents, they loved me the best way the system had presented itself.
I know in some of our previous discussions that we've talked about your grandmother, and you kind of highlighted the fact that, you know, she didn't really push gender norms or religious norms kind of upon you. And she was kind of the rebel outstander a little bit. And that's why you bonded so closely with her. Can you discuss a little of that for us?
We grew up Pentecostal and like no makeup. And my grandmother cut her hair. She had makeup. I mean, she had all the things. And we would just go on road trips together. And she'd call me a brat. And she would tell me, I would just pick on her. Our favorite song was Babe. We would watch Golden Girls together. We would go sister, like all of these very quote unquote gay things. We embrace. She let me just be. And my parents, it was like, no, here's a baseball. And she taught me. She was the one that taught me how to paint. That's what we did. So she allowed me to be the creative that I am and embrace that.
Were there points in which you noticed yourself kind of getting braver on your journey to come out?
I had never went to a gay bar, and I knew there was big. And I remember the first time, I'm like, I'm just going to drive by it. And I literally parked across the street and just watched. I'm like, well, I don't think anyone's dying in there. Like, I mean, the church had conditioned me to think this about people or just these situations. And I just was like, okay. And then I parked. And then the next day or the next time, I just like, I'm going to go in. But I don't drink. So what we're going to drink? We're going to order a Shirley Temple. So I literally went in, sat down at the bar, ordered a Shirley Temple, drank that down. All right, thanks. And I gave him like a $10 tip, I think, because I was like just wanting to get out of there. So I did that by myself. And then I had, at the time I was a property manager, and one of my tenants kind of just embraced me as a person. I came out to them and they just kind of said, it's going to be okay. And it was really a beautiful time in my life because I was surrounded by people that weren't in the same situation I was, but they knew what it was like to be misunderstood and to be marginalized and to be taken advantage of and to feel trapped. And so I would have these very deep conversations with them. And one of the tenants, they said, we need to go to play sometime. And I'm like, okay. So for about a month, she kept saying, we need to go. And I'm like, I want to go. So I decided I'm going to go to play. I'm going to go to a drag show for the first time. I literally text this person and I was like, is it safe? Like to go alone. Then text another friend, like, I'm letting you know where I'm going in case I die. I parked three blocks. I parked over by Butchertown Bakery and walked because I was afraid if I went missing, my parents would wonder, what is my son's car doing at a gay bar? So I walked from there to play. That was like just when I got to play. However, at the same time, I'm like, what do you wear to a gay bar? What do you wear to a nightclub? Like the only perception of nightclubs I had were movies. And even then, like, because we were so sheltered, like when I thought of a nightclub, I thought of like Ricky Ricardo at in I Love Lucy. And I'm like, that seems like a very posh place. Like people dress up. I wore black dress pants. I looked like I was going to church. At a nightclub, and I took myself out to dinner. I'm like, we're just gonna just make the most of it. I look nice. I parked. I walk in. I had like $100 worth of cash at the ATM because I didn't want my parents for whatever. I was like, I don't want my credit card to get or what, like a bill or any kind of random thing for anything to be traced back to me. And so I go in. And I was like, what is this? What are we doing? I was there at 8 o'clock because I saw that the doors opened at 8, the show at 9. And I sat there for an hour just like, what am I doing? I sat in the back corner and I just kind of watched people. And I'm like, okay, nothing's happening. Everything seems normal. These people like seem nice. But I was still very much in shock. And I remember the show started. And I just kind of watched. And I think, I don't know who the first performer was, but the two standouts at that night were Diana Ray. And I remember she did Spotlight by Jennifer Hudson. And I'm just like, this is intense. So Diana's doing Spotlight, and then Lexi Love comes on. And she's on roller skates, and she's already tall anyways, and there's a stage, and I'm looking up, and I'm like, my jaw was dropped, and I'm like, I'm going to tip her. I'm going to do it. I'm going to, because I put it together like, oh, you give them money. I couldn't see that it was ones. I think I gave her a five. And I just walk, and I don't even think I could look at her. I think I just, like, held it up, like, straight up, like, just kind of, like, don't make eye contact, because they'll see right through you. And I went back, and I'm like, oh, I did it. And that was a Friday night. And then I went Saturday night. And then I went Sunday. And then I realized that the Sunday crowd is not the same as the Friday and Saturday night. And I went home.
How did that experience of going to play make you feel?
I felt this sense of, like, home. Like, I had been in church services all my life. And always when I would go in there, I felt like I had to be on a performance. Like, I always felt like I had to be on. And I literally just was at play. And, like, I felt so accepted. But no one was accepting me. Like, no one was saying anything to me. I just be there. Like, I literally just was existing, and that was enough to be in that space at that time. Versus the church, I grew up in a church where you had to wear a suit. You had to wear a tie. Literally, you had to wear a suit. I got kicked out of all the positions during that time because I missed two services in a month because I was grieving and I needed to get away and go to Ohio. And I got in a mass email to the entire staff, including my brother, who did not know this conversation had happened, about how I was effectively removed from all positions. And here I am at play and just feeling the sense of, like, I belong here.
How accepting was the LGBTQ plus community once you started to get to know people at play and elsewhere?
At that time, because chosen family is a term that we hear a lot about. And honestly, the first group of people that really embraced me were my photography community, which makes sense. I mean, artists, we understand, as artists, we understand, you know, our art is expression. And so in September, I made a Facebook post for private friends only, just in the photography community, and they totally embraced me. They were like, and I'll also say that coming out to people that knew you, and they say the response of, I've known, I got that a lot of, like, I'm not surprised.
Did that make you feel bad that people actually said that they already knew you were gay?
In my mind, I was like, if they say they knew, then at some point I must have felt comfortable enough to just be myself around them.
What about when people, like, at the church kind of commented on it?
I told my parents this. I was like, there's always been rumors about Josh Astor being gay. Always. And the only, like, support or only, like, options they gave me was to pray it through. So now that I'm actually living this, the thing that they all said about me, and they're saying I knew it, how does that make sense?
How welcoming do you think the LGBTQ plus community was whenever you started to get to know everyone and kind of in the community?
I kept going to play, literally, and I made connections. You know, I would always hang around one of the bartenders, and we just chat. But there was a person that would run, like, the coat room, someone that ran the door, and her name is Kat, and she works at play at the front door. And she was like, "You, this is the first time?" It's like, yeah. So she went around and introduced me to anyone who was breathing that she knew. And then I would hang around the Jailer at the coat room, and we would just talk. And that was the first person I got to meet who was trans, who I would have conversations with. And I would be very self-conscious about saying the right thing or the wrong thing and trying to be as genuine as possible. And they just created that space for me to ask questions. And it wasn't a sense of judgment. It was like, no, you just don't know. And so at that time, I went in November for the first time. And I kept going consistently every Friday and Saturday night. And during that time, I would have to come up with reasons on why I wasn't available for family things on Friday and Saturday night, but I kept going. And I met Gilda through, she had performed it for Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And I just went up to her and said, that was absolutely wonderful. I loved it. Moved on. And then we eventually kept going and kept talking. And I said I was a photographer and I'd love to take her picture sometime. And she was great. It wasn't until I really started connecting with other individuals, though, from play until Drag Queens on Ice. Which is, I would feel like the definitive moment when I finally like connected with other people in the LGBTQ plus community. I show up, so I've been going to play for a solid month and a half at that time, and I find out there's going to be Drag Queens on Ice, and Leah Halston is going to be hosting. And I thought, oh, Leah's going to be there. I have to be there. Like, why not? So I had, and that was on a Saturday. On that Friday, I went up to her and I said, hey, are you going to be there? And she said, yeah, I think so. I hope so, but I don't know how to skate. And I'm like, oh, well, that'll be interesting. So once again, show up alone. I had never been in a relationship with a woman, period. I've always been single. So I've always learned to be comfortable just doing things by myself. Going out, going to shows, doing things by myself. So for me, going to Drag Queens, like these events by myself was not anything new. So I show up, I had my ones, because it's a drag show, you are going to tip someone. So I show up and I look and she is wearing a green outfit, but she doesn't have a coat. And I'm like, you have to be freezing. And so at that time I had this nice pea coat and I'm like, here, take my coat, use this. I have another one in my car. So the entire night, I said, you literally look like Michelle Obama, just very professional hosting in my coat. And I was so proud that I had done something. Like, I just felt I have done something good for the world. I have kept someone warm. And I went, I got her hot chocolate, and I just got to share my story. And when she was talking to me, that's when she goes, you need to meet Curtis. And I'm like, okay. And you just need to meet Curtis. So since then, that she and I kind of connected that way.
Those kind of pivotal friendships that you made early on, in comparison to most LGBTQ members that are kind of coming out for the first time, you managed to meet some, I will say, bigger players in the community. How did that kind of help your photography journey? Can you talk specifically about your photography journey?
What I used to do, I used to be a family and newborn photographer. Most of my clients were from the Christian school that I taught at. So that's kind of where my clients were from, you know? And I determined, I was also getting in a very like burnt out stage, but also I did not, one of the things I deal with is rejection a lot of times. Like that fear of rejection is a very big part of who I am sometimes. And I was like, I'm going to close my business down. So I'm not going to give people the option of not choosing me. My work was very themed, very stylized. It was unique. And I just was like, done. I was done. So I kind of dropped off the face of the earth. And when I was working with Eric, he goes, what do you really want to do? I'm like, at the time I said, I want to photograph like male boudoir, gay pinup, and drag queens. And this was like in probably September, October, when I kind of determined that's what I really wanted to do. At one point, I was even thinking about moving to California just to get away. But I said, that's what I really wanted to do. And then in February, Gilda said, hey, I got some outfits. I need photograph. Would you want to work together? I'm like, sure. And then so that was February. Yeah. And in March, that same week, Melody Valentine had asked me, like, would you take pictures? Because I had started sharing some of my old work. And like, okay, if I would bring my lights and my camera to play and photograph them behind the stage. I'm like, sure. It was surreal. I'm behind the stage at play in the back corner, and I'm looking in the mirror at myself, and it's like, I'm doing it. I'm doing the thing that I said I wanted to do. Like, I literally texted Eric. I'm like, I manifested this shit. And he was like, yes, you fucking did. And I'm like, yeah, this is what I wanted. And those images are still some of my favorites. And it was one of those moments like, oh, I am good. I for the first time looked at my work and I wasn't looking at it like, yeah, it could be a little, like there's things I could tweak. But I was like, okay, we're good. We like this. So that was in February. I have done male boudoir. That goes into, I actually had done that from September. I had done a session from people I met in Grindr. Showed up late one night with all my lights, went to a hotel room. That was fun. So I do that in drag queens. And right now it's kind of taken a shift. Because really what I like to do is empower people. And really at this point, I want to empower other people in our community.
You've mentioned Eric Feltes, who is a gay religious life coach. And he's pretty well known on TikTok and other places like that, social media. Can you tell us why you actually hired a gay life coach? And can you kind of discuss that experience and that program that he put you through?
I was like in that space of, I need help. And one of the biggest fears I had was church shame. And that's literally his program is about freeing men from church shame. Like it's a thing. And I know I'm like, I don't want to do this alone. And with coaching, it's a different mindset of like therapy. I look at it as coaching is I'm running the race, but they're showing me like pitfalls and things to consider. Like, hey, did you consider this? So it was really important when I saw this, like this really resonated with me. And the concept of being a Christian, I'm like, you know, I have only been told a very evangelical narrative of what it means to be a Christian. And what does that look like? One of the books he recommended was a book called Unclobber. And what it does, it takes this, I think there's 7 passages that most pastors, most churches will use to condemn homosexuality. And I bought the audiobook and I like absorbed that because I'm like, okay, we're going to go slow and we're going to try to unlearn some things. And so a lot of it was me trying to deconstruct, which is a term a lot of people use nowadays, but also work on the fears of coming out with someone. And so it was really good to have that person like, okay, you don't know how everyone's going to respond, but what can you do? What can you control and what can't you control? Your reactions, you can control that. Their reactions, you don't. And giving yourself the best option or putting yourself in the best situation so you're ready was really helpful for me for that. At this time, I actually work with him. I started doing some graphic work for him, so now I'm a little bit more involved with the program, just like with some Instagram posts and some other little virtual assistant stuff. And you don't realize church shame is really that powerful until you start connecting with other gay men or gay individuals and you're like, oh, trauma, that's the thing. Yeah, church trauma, it's a real thing.
I can see that this program that Eric Feltes kind of ran really helped you kind of come to terms with both, you know, your religious section and your identity as a gay male. So can you kind of tell us about your coming out experience, those moments when you actually started to come out?
September, I came out to my aunt and my cousin. And I thought at that time, I didn't really expect them to say like, woohoo. But I was very much like, I need to tell you this. I'm talking to you. The reaction was, well, the Bible is very clear on these issues. And something that really irks me now is when people use heaven as like a ploy, but also in the sense of like, well, if you want to see grandma, like that was the things that were said to me. So that has been a little bit of a challenge. At the same, our relationship now with that aunt and cousin though is super, we're very close. We're at a point where I've just told him like, look, I do not want to talk about this every time we're together. If we can have dinner and look at 98%, we're like on the same page about 98% of the things. Our relationship is much more than that. I'm the same person. If we can only focus on 2% when we're together now, that's going to be a problem. So boundaries are really good. It wasn't until April that my first family member found out. What had happened was I had been tagged in a video on TikTok. Now, the Pentecostal church preaches against social media. Part of that is to control the narrative, controlling what influences their people. So social media, news, television, it's all about control. And my sister had got on TikTok, somehow saw one of my videos, and I get this FaceTime while I'm at work. I'm like, this is really weird. So I excuse myself. I take a 15-minute break. I'm like, hey, what's up? And she said, what are you doing? I'm like, just at work, like every Friday in the middle of the day. And she said, well, I was looking at your TikTok. And I'm like, yeah. Now, at that point, I had actually, I will say this. I have yet to say I'm gay on TikTok. It's there. Like, you can read in between the lines. But I had never even said that. And she said, are you there? She goes, there's some stuff on there. And I'm like, yeah. She says, do you have something you need to tell me? And I'm like, do I? Now, at this point, of all of my siblings, I thought she would be the most understanding and most like willing to work through it, I guess. And she just looked at me and she goes, are you homosexual? And the word, the way she worded it just made me laugh. I'm like, what is this, the 1950s? Like, am I homosexual? It sounds, there's this play called A Chorus Line, and this guy makes a line about, that's the first time I knew I was homosexual. And I'm like, that's what it sounds like. It sounds, it's just like, the phrasing just sounds so weird. And I'm like, huh? And I just, in that moment, I was like, I said yes. That was a very surreal moment because it was like, I'm owning it. Like, I'm claiming this now. But also, I know this is going to forever change our relationship. And she said, well, you know what the Bible says. And then she said the same thing about if you want to see grandma again. I'm like, what is this? Like, why is everyone concerned about? And then she made the comments as well. You have a spirit, and there are people that can help you get through this and get delivered. Okay. And then I had to go to work, and then the next day I followed up with them. I'm like, I love you. You know, and I said, I'm still your brother. She says, same here. And then she made the comment that she needed, she said, now I have children, and I have, you know, as their mother, I need to guard them. I'm like, okay. So that was April. We saw each other in May. There wasn't any issues. As of today, we are not talking. And that's, there's a lot of stuff that's went down. A lot of it is in the church mindset. The pastor is like right up there with Jesus Christ himself. And so he does no wrong and he shouldn't be questioned. And there were some things that came up and I just want to live my life. So that was my sister's reaction. I have a brother and another sister. I've yet to have a conversation with either of them, but I think it's one of those, like, I'm at the point now, if they ask, I'll tell them. But why do I? We're there. We see each other maybe once. I haven't seen him in like 3 weeks. So like, why am I going to do that? In June, I came out to my mother and my dad. My mom found out because a cousin had started searching. I like disappear. My Facebook page is the most boring thing ever now. Like, I don't post anything. My private Instagram is locked. And then Jay Steele page, like, it takes a lot for someone to find me. And this cousin did some snooping, sent my mom a text message, and basically outed me. My mother, she grew up in the Pentecostal denomination. So I get tired of being like the understanding person. I get really tired, and it's like, yes, I get why this is, why you would see this this way, because this is what you always knew. So like, I get it, but I saw her today. She says, I love you too. But you can tell, like, it's fear. They are operating from a place of fear. And when you operate from fear, your actions are sad. I was living in that fear. So these people out in the church world, they're looking at me as myself. She's like, this is their words. We raise our children to go to heaven. And now that in their mind, I'm not going. And that is a huge fear for them. And so they're grappling with that too. My dad, though, which my dad and I had a very strained relationship up until this point, we get along great. Granted, we still don't talk a lot because we never see each other. But I found out that basically there are people that are in the Pentecostal denomination. This is not new for someone to come out. But what happens is they get quote unquote shunned in a way. It's not like a legitimate thing. It's just they disappear. You never hear from them. And they just it's just the weirdest dynamic. And my dad he told someone, he goes, every other person that goes through this, they don't talk about it. And so when it happens and it happens to you, you have no support. You are in that world by yourself. I'm like, oh yeah. I actually gave him the book on Clobber and he's read it. It's been really interesting. But 2 weeks ago, so they knew I was gay, but they did not know I worked at Play. So I had actually had a conversation with the owners at Play about how, because they would check on me, and they are some of the most genuine people, and we connected, and they know my story. And so, do your parents know that you do this? I'm like, no, they would have a cow if they knew I was working at a gay nightclub. Like, that would just be the end of the world. So I show up, and I get this text message from my mother that said, Josh, the world is gaining, it's obvious the world is gaining control over your spirit. You must make your choices, choose the right path, choose wisely. Love you, Mom. I'm like, what? Where is this coming from? I don't know what's going on. So I show up at their house. I'm like, what? My father, I had on a Saturday night, I was going to go see Work the World, which is a RuPaul on tour drag race thing. And I don't know if it was like I got a promo flyer or something. I had left something out in my car. I don't know how. But they found out that I was there. And they also noticed that I always had like ones. A lot of ones. And my dad had done some snooping and had Googled like that Saturday, like what events were in Louisville. And he saw that this and he goes, so he goes, Josh, do you know what the drag races are? He called them the drag races. I'm like, yeah. He goes, how do you feel about that? He goes, when I grew up, I mean, there was like Flip Wilson. What do you feel? I'm like, I'm like, huh? You're like Flip Wilson and like Benny Hill. I'm like, but what? These are like, they look really good. I'm like, okay, Dad. And I said, yes, I was there, and I work at a nightclub. I told him where I work at, and I said, that's what I'm doing on Fridays and most Saturdays. And I'm like, I have found good people. I've made good connections with people who are legitimately concerned for me. There was a situation one night, and I don't even care. Someone had did something that just really didn't set well with me. Like they just really, it was just a really weird vibe. And Gil, I told Gilda, and she was like, you want me to block them? I mean, she was like ready to go. And I'm like, this is what I got. And I said, I'm in a good space. I am safe.
And how do you feel that your LGBTQ friends have been supportive in kind of comparison to those friends from the church and people that you knew before really coming out?
When I wrecked my car, they were the ones asking, do I need anything? Do I need a ride? Do I need to borrow their car? But when I lost my grandmother and I left church, I've heard from two people. So the community that they offer, the church community that they are so proud of, that is the end all, is based on people doing, is all about performing. You perform, you do this, you do what we like, and we will give you, we'll make you feel like you belong. But the moment you stop doing the things that they like, forget it. I was heavily involved in the children's ministry. I was the best damn organist in that movement, period. I don't even care what they think. Yep, I was good. I was doing all these things, and part of it was people pleasing, because that's what we do when we're gay. In that system, you do things for validation. I was doing this over and over, all these things, and I lost my grandmother. I'm like, I need to go away. And there was this stupid rule that if you wanted to be in the choir, you could only miss 4 services a year. I missed 2 in a month. And I sent an email and I said, I'm missing one more. And the pastor sent mass email, like I said before, Josh Astor is removed from all positions effective immediately. I lasted 2 weeks. And then I'm sitting in a service, had not had a conversation with this pastor, never had, just an email. A service, they had this visiting preacher come in. Why am I getting heated up over this? He preached about God's design and how we are a masterpiece and we are who God intended for us to be. Now, this pastor would never affirm someone gay, period. But I, you know what? If you believe that God used Balaam's ass to talk to him, you know, why not use a pastor? So I like take that to heart. Like, okay. And then my pastor showed up, gets in my ear and says, you were doing so good. And I just walked out. And I'm like, I'm done. And that community, and it was like, I kept waiting for people to check on me. I got 2. And it was like, you know what? I don't need this. This is what you offered. And a lot of pastors are narcissists. That's just where it comes from. And that community that my parents were saying was so great, I'm like, this is shit. But I know, I legitimately know if I had an emergency, if there was a problem, I can call about 5 or 10 people from Play or the LGBTQ community in this area or really anywhere at this point, and I'd get the help I need.
Would you say that you are glad that you waited to come out to family?
Honestly, I'm kind of glad I waited because I feel like my parents are really into focus on the family so much that probably there's this book called Bringing Up the Boys, and I remember finding it on my dad's nightstand, and I took it and read it, and there's a whole chapter about homosexuality, and I read that, and when I came out, I found that shelf, that book on his shelf, and like it's in my car. I keep it with me at all because I don't want him to find it again so he could try to understand. Like, we're not going to refresh on that chapter anytime soon. And I really feel like if I was younger, my parents probably would have sent me to a camp.
So you've been out for a year now. Are you happier now than you were then?
Coming out does not make things easier. It just makes it more authentic. And the biggest takeaway I learned from this, or just on this journey so far, is I am more, as someone who's still single, I am more, much more comfortable by myself and sleeping at night than before. So happy, what is happy? That, does that mean gay? that was like the comeback back in the day. Like, oh, are you gay? No, I'm, that just means you're happy, you know, like, but, so yeah, I'm gay. But yeah, I'm happy. I'm happier.
What fears do you still have after a year of being out?
At this point in my life, we're at the place of Josh can be in the room with us. Well, some of the family members, but like, there's this fear of, I want to be in a relationship. What does that look like? What does that look like when it's no longer Josh is single? Josh actually, oh, because at this point, it's almost like this validation of you're not, I had a conversation with someone. It's like you almost, that relationship, you look for that as validation. Oh no, he is gay. He's doing, and like, yes, I'm doing it. Like there's, he's gay. He has someone. And I had a conversation with my mom about like, will I be invited to the family picture? I don't know if I want to be in it. I'm like, you wanted, this brother-in-law doesn't want me in there because I'm gay, but he's a bigot. They get to choose what boundaries they can set. And I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. So there's this, the fear of more rejection, more confrontation. And they don't like confrontation. So that's a big fear. There's also the fear of finding someone, because I want that, but do I want that or do I want the idea of that? And then connecting authentically with someone.
Now, I know you journaled a lot, and you brought your journal with you. Can you just pull out some passages of things that kind of you journaled that helped you along the way of, you know, overcoming these fears and coming out to people?
The very first day I journaled, I wrote, because we were supposed to write, the assignment was to write I am statements. And so I wrote, I am a gay man. I just wrote it and I stared at that and I'm like, okay. And so then I was like, I want to try something. And I wrote, I am a straight man. And I just like looked at him and immediately like saying it, I like, oh gosh, that's wrong. And I just crossed it out because I just knew. I just knew. This is one that's future. And it says, I'm thankful for a church that accepts me, because they are out there. I am not a disappointment to God. I am thankful for the opportunities to share my story.
Now that you've been out a year, the most important question I could ask, and I think will be beneficial to people that are kind of in your stage of coming out, that are or about to come out, is, after experiencing this for a year, what would you tell the younger version of yourself from a year ago, the one that hadn't come out yet, the one that was so afraid of coming out? What would you tell that younger version of Josh from your standpoint today?
I would tell him what my grandmother told me on her deathbed. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. Don't forget to come on back now. I know we all love a little vibration, so if you're not already, go ahead and subscribe to this podcast. And we will surprise you on occasion with a new release vibration in your pocket. But in the meantime, if you find yourself alone or crossing new horizons along the rainbow trail, and you need a friend or even a laugh to get you through those dark and stormy nights, holler on out to us at www.weatheringrainbows.com, where you can find shelter in the blog, videos, and other episodes that will hopefully keep you out of a whole heap of trouble. So until next time, y'all, giddy up, be true to yourself, and make the best of life. And wherever the wild tracks may lead you, may the rainbow always touch your shoulder.